I am going to be covering the Hot Topic program issues, and I found it very interesting and challenging to pull together the many different aspects of the excellence that's really shown in STD program practice, research, and surveillance and epidemiology activities that culminates in this conference every single year. But I thought it was very appropriate that the conference theme is confronting challenges and applying solutions, because I think as public health, as the public health infrastructure of the United States that's represented here at this conference, we have an obligation to continue doing what we're doing. People are counting on us. So I do want to emphasize that there may be challenges, but these challenges can be overcome.
Okay.
So similar to what Ginny presented, and we communicated last night and talked about some of the caveats and, of course, the issues around translational research. It does overlap in terms of boundaries. So really, I also delve into some of the research issues. But however, I developed my presentation to focus on the actual presentations on this conference, focusing on innovations in public health practice, as well as grouping items onto common themes and essentially lessons learned from this conference to highlight some of the emerging issues in STD prevention and control. I highlight, of course, only selected abstracts. I can't provide an exhaustive list of every single presentation because there have been many outstanding presentations given, and we are limited in time, so I'm going to continue forward. Okay. The conference started off with the epidemiology that was highlighted in recent press releases showing and documenting the increases in STDs that are going across the country. In particular, the study that was published by Foreign, looking at the NHANES data, was very dramatic, documenting the prevalence of STDs among young women to be 1 in 4, particularly African American women at 48% of young women under age 19 to be infected with an STD. HPV being number one, and then followed by chlamydia and other STDs, including HSV. We saw the abstract by Lindsay Satterwhite on chlamydia trends, which are going up. For the first time, chlamydia reached over 1 million cases nationwide, as well as the changes in the epidemiology of syphilis in the United States as syphilis continues to rise. We also saw the trends in gonorrhea reports throughout the United States, and for the second consecutive year, gonorrhea rates have been increasing. So we also have lost the effective medications used to treat gonorrhea, and we're left with one class, which is the class of cephalosporins. So we're actively monitoring the levels of resistance, especially to cephalosporins, since it is the last remaining class of drugs effective in combating this growing epidemic. And also, then we saw new priorities, okay, and I found it very, very interesting, and there are huge, significant implications for not only surveillance programs, but programs, STD control programs nationwide, which is the emergence of HPV and HSV. Many of the states, the majority of states, do not have mandatory reporting for HPV and HSV, and now that the availability of the vaccine is out on the market with the emergence in 2008, of the second vaccine that is anticipated for FDA approval to effectively prevent HPV vaccines, I think the surveillance issues around HPV are yet to be developed and are developing in progress, as well as the implications of what the HPV vaccine will actually mean. So there have been many presentations, including several workshops and symposia, looking at the national and state and local perspectives on what what does HPV actually mean? And very creative surveillance systems have been identified, which include cancer registries, and monitoring the levels of cervical cancer and precancerous lesions in the country and in states. We also want to look at the impact of the vaccine itself on utilization rates and whether this actually reduces the amounts of STDs seen in clinics. So we have surveillance conducted through the Sentinel STD clinic surveillance network, looking at the prevalence of genital ulcer, genital warts, as the HPV vaccine gets rolled out and more people are utilizing it. Also, there was a very wonderful mini plenary on genital herpes, and I think Ginny covered a lot of the prevention issues and the programmatic issues around genital herpes. So I'm just going to quickly go through. Go on to the next slide. We also talked about missed opportunities and solutions, and I want to present two examples. So in Tao and colleagues described the missed opportunities for chlamydia screening in young women in the United States, and from a national survey documented that even women getting OBGYN visits and getting pap smears, the majority, more than 80%, are not getting a chlamydia test. That definitely represents a missed opportunity for integrated STD and women's health screening and integration of both services. However, Farr and colleagues presented information on the integration of contraceptive and STD-HIV services for young women in the United States. Still, the majority of women receiving contraception are not getting STD and HIV services simultaneously. The rates, I believe, were 35%. There's room to grow, but it represents a starting point. And now that we have documentation, we have a baseline from which to grow and integrate additional services. It's important for women's health, and it's important for STDs and HIV prevention as well. Malia and colleagues also documented the missed gonorrhea infections by anatomic sites among asymptomatic MSM attending U.S. STD clinics from 2000 to 2006. And again, I think once you test and you start looking, you'll find asymptomatic gonorrhea infections in the throat, and as well as in the rectum. The availability of nucleic acid amplification tests can serve as a very useful tool to identify non-genital chlamydia and gonorrhea infections. So again, I think the late breaker presentation by Dr. Julie Schachter was a landmark and a very important contribution to the field, as it will continue to press the FDA for additional clearance for use of these drugs and use of these tests in the non-genital sites. As the testing technologies advance, we as program folks have to implement interventions and make these tests available and integrate them into routine clinical practice. This is how the field advances. Also, as part of the confronting challenges and finding solutions theme, we are always looking for getting the most out of the public health dollar. Dr. Chesson and colleagues looked at the impact of federal funding for syphilis elimination activities over the last several years, and a very important study which describes something that's a little somewhat obvious. When syphilis elimination funding is available, rates go down. So given the recent restrictions and reductions in funding, we can hypothesize what the impact of that may be. Sari Hogan and colleagues described a wonderful presentation, putting your money where your mouth is, making tough choices when allocating scarce resources. And it described in Baltimore the application of GIS methods to target screening activities and outreach activities and scarce limited resources that can be focused into the highest prevalence neighborhoods and communities, which is an effective use of the public health dollar. So Braun and colleagues looked at the question of maximizing chlamydia screening to adolescent females in school-based health centers and looked at different criteria on whether to screen or not screen, as well as a symposia looking at corrections and the focus on the corrections population as an effective way to identify cases that may have community implications and declines seen in community settings when an active, robust, targeted screening program is applied to a high-risk population in a correctional setting. So Charlotte Kent and colleagues presented this morning at that this morning's symposia. So another important theme was maximizing our existing programs, utilizing our existing resources. And New York City, Denver, and Chicago presented their data looking at the use of express visits, showing a 19% to 30% acceptance rate or utilization rate of these fast-track alternative services in delivering express visits to care so that it opens up and expands the capacities of the clinics. And so as we're in Illinois, will this play in Peoria? The question is yes. The answer is yes. I spoke to Ms. McClelland, who is with the Peoria Department of Public Health, and they've integrated express visits to successfully expand their capacities within a rural county health department. So it does play in Peoria. We also focused a lot of our discussions on program collaboration and service integration. And this is, again, a very important and building movement within the state, local, and federal public health entities. A very important discussion was had in the Power of Many Voices, and folks, representatives from NCSD, NASDAQ, and some of the and the other national organizations have already begun implementing integration of and collaboration at the national level. So this is going to work its way through the state and local health departments, and it totally makes sense. We're going to be reaching direct service populations that see STDs and HIV and hepatitis all as the same thing and expect services from that. So actually, service integration makes sense. We saw many examples of this in the presentations and the abstracts that were presented at this week's conference. We saw the increased use of HIV rapid testing in STD clinics that has been integrated with a quicker, more efficient case referral system, as well as looking at some of the factors related to acute HIV screening in STD clinics in New York City. There was a paper presented also by Greg Zimet and colleagues looking at the effectiveness of brief interventions to increase HBV vaccines acceptance among STD clinic patients. And information gathered from the HBV studies, such as this, looking at the factors and what clinics can actually implement to increase acceptance, has implications also for the HPV vaccine as well. And I agree wholeheartedly with the importance, whenever we talk about program collaboration and service integration, of the importance of integrating women's health into STD and HIV services. We had a very important example of that when we looked at STD testing at emergency contraceptive contraception visits in New York City STD clinics, presented by colleagues Handel and others from New York City. And again, it demonstrates the importance of integrating STD care as well as women's health care into one entity, because that's what patients expect of us. The internet has been around now for, golly, more than 10 years, 15 years, and it continues to evolve. A very interesting, fascinating, an important paper documents internet information-seeking behaviors of a TV medical drama among viewers. So even in real time, as the show is playing on, people are checking out online to check out information from the CDC website, to look up information about chlamydia, herpes, and other health information as the drama is playing on television. I think that's a very important aspect because that's where we're headed as a society, with this instant information. Jeff Klausner from San Francisco presented a good summary of the 21st century STD prevention and control methods using internet-based tools consisting of the websites of Ask Dr. K, a physician question and answer internet-based tool, as well as the documentation by Phillips and colleagues looking at the online emergency contraception prescription service that is distributed through the internet. Bob Cohn from San Francisco created an online STD results system so patients can get their results online. And expanded testing and information can be done through the websites, as well as training through stdpreventiononline.org by Case Rietmeyer and colleagues. All aspects of our programmatic activities are now moving online, and I think this is the wave of the future. There have been innovations in practice. We now have examples of the use of nucleic acid amplification tests, testing multiple specimens in different variety of different ways, self-collected vaginal swabs, self-obtained urogenital swabs mailed and delivered through the mail, provider and self-collected rectal screening for gonorrhea and chlamydia, as well as self-collected penile swabs. And a very interesting and I think important abstract was presented by Mendez and colleagues of giving HIV positive test results over the phone. Again, due to resource constraints, there is an example of a successful program that was presented as a poster session. Eliminating disparities and removing barriers is an important focus. We saw targeted screening to eliminate disparities in schools, in corrections, in minorities, in the Indian country as well. There was a symposium that was presented at this year's conference looking at issues around confidentiality and adolescent care related to STD screening. And I think as more and more services go into the private sector, again, additional barriers for STD screening have to be reduced and removed, as well as expanded documentation, collaborative efforts for STD, HIV, and teen pregnancy collaborations were documented in the California symposia. Okay, so when we look at more effective partner management strategies, we look at internet-based partner notification strategies that were presented, as well as internet-based partner notification delivered through a community-based DIS program, and we saw effective partner PCRS services for HIV provided, and as well as the continued expansion and guidance and program development of expedited partner therapy. A toolkit is a wonderful thing that programs can use to address some of the barriers for EPT implementation. So we continue to have to focus on these new innovations, but we can't forget about doing the basics well. Practice guidelines can help us do those the basics well, and as we integrate STD and HIV partner services, the guidelines are going to come in very handy. There have been also statewide efforts to increase STD HIV education in schools and in different settings. This is something we've done, but as the awareness of STDs expands and the epidemiology changes, there's going to be even more need for these. A great late breaker presentation that was presented yesterday looked at the New York City Free Condom Initiative to make condoms available. And a key lesson learned there was the use of the internet, which facilitates community-based organizations to order condoms online. And it just makes it a lot easier and faster for community-based organizations to get their condoms. There are two structural interventions that I would like to highlight, and it's the Project Connect symposia that was that looked at multi-level social and ecological interventions for adolescents in Los Angeles. This is part of an NIH intervention to change the social conditions to work with collaborative agencies, to work with schools, to work with legislators, to work with structural persons of influence in the community, not only to expand screening and improve education, but ultimately to reduce rates of chlamydia. And I think this is a very important program to keep an eye on, because it is in progress, and I think we're going to hear more data later on in the following years. Also, a late breaker presentation looked at that was presented from Shiver and folks from the state of Florida looked at the alignment of technology, policy, and law, which increased perinatal STD identification by 200%. The state mandate to have laboratory reporting, plus the innovations in electronic laboratory reporting, resulted in an increase in the number of cases of STDs reported in the state of Florida that ultimately improved STD surveillance, and then the money and the programs will have to respond to the increased need to respond to the reports. And I think as we, all of us, move towards a more expanded use of electronic laboratory reporting systems as well as electronic medical record systems, the lesson around electronic lab surveillance is that when these systems get implemented, the disease reporting increases, and STDs will be highly impacted by these important technologies that ultimately helps us do our jobs better and faster and more efficient. So I want to close by a few images and a few thoughts. Remember the picture of the bridge? It served as a metaphor for what happens when public infrastructure is neglected, okay? There's another side to the story as it continues, because I looked online to the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and this is a picture from the webcam of the I-35 bridge construction project as it advances. This picture, I believe, was taken last week. So the foundations have been laid and the bridge is being rebuilt. These are the plans for that bridge. It's going to be bigger and better than it was before. It's going to contain 10 lanes of traffic and 5 in each direction, with two lanes wider than the former bridge. It's going to be constructed of concrete. It's anticipated to last for over 100 years. It also even has light rail transport. It will be light rail transport ready. There's an extra lane where you can plant a train line in anticipation for the future. And it's being built with a design to build process, meaning the designs get rolled out and the construction begins even when the final design isn't complete yet, okay? I think this is an important metaphor for public health. It doesn't have to be this way, be the way of the bridge collapse. And if we take the proper measures and reinvest in public health, it could be a bigger, brighter future, Okay? And I want to also leave with two thoughts from Illinois and from Chicago. I learned a very important lesson from Charlie Rabins. I learned the three letters, NBB, because it's never been better. We have wonderful opportunities and wonderful technologies as the science moves forward. And it's our job as program folks to integrate these new technologies into our program activities. And this, the next slide is a phrase that I've been circulating in the Chicago Health Department. As we look out across the lake, we see the rising sun. And how do we know it's the rising sun? Because we're looking over Lake Michigan and it's in the east. Some staff question whether the sun is rising or setting. And I say it's rising, definitely, because 2008 is going to be great. So don't be late. Thank you.